You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey.
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
And today, we are talking about something very, very fun. We've only done this once before, and as we teased last week... We are going to do a write your own episode, and this was just to give credit where credit is due. The first idea came behind this from listening to Trekcast, which is a Star Trek podcast, and it's one of my favorite Star Trek podcasts that's outside of Trek.fm, and they did a write your own episode, and I was, you know, a long time ago, and I was like, you know what, I think that would be fun for Voyager, and so we did it. And it was a lot of fun. I think we did a Chakotay-based episode.
We did.
Is that right? Yeah. But this week, we're doing a fan submission, and it is on the Mirror Universe.
Yes. Long ago. I mean, many people have suggested, why don't you guys tackle the Mirror Universe many times over the years? But the very first, long, long ago, was a listener named Nicole L., and so we're going to give her credit for suggesting the Mirror Universe, and then we're going to put this spin on it where we're just going to write a story on the fly.
So we thank you to all of those people who mentioned that we should do the Mirror Universe, and I know some of you are thinking like, oh, you know, what the hell? You know, why aren't we getting a fan shout out? Well, if we listed everybody, it would be like 15 people long.
It really would, and we try to keep things concise on TTJ, so we're going with the very first. That's how we do it. First come, first serve. But we do thank everybody for their input, nevertheless. We are listening.
We are listening, and we very much thank you guys, and keep it coming, because we love your ideas, and we love doing your ideas, and 99% of them are fantastic.
yeah, they truly are. Now, in terms of the Mirror Universe, we never really got a Mirror Universe episode, unfortunately, on Voyager. I mean, the closest thing we got was Latent Image, but I would say for a lot of us, that was not enough.
Yeah, I very much consider that the Mirror Universe episode of Voyager. I really do, because there's just so much to it that's just so great and so evil and so sinister, mm-hmm. and things are a little different. And if you think about it, like in Deep Space Nine, we saw Vic Fontaine. Like, Vic Fontaine is a hologram, but in the Mirror Universe, we saw him as an android.
Yes.
And we kind of saw that before in Living Witness, by the way, not Latent Image.
Oh, okay. All right, it's L titles. Apparently, I can't
titles,
do
yeah.
it.
It was Living Witness, and what we saw in Living Witness was in their holographic representation, they mistook the Doctor, who is a hologram, as an android, and so, and that's just one of the very, very many parallels. I mean, like in Living Witness, you know, like the lights are darker, you know, like they're wearing gloves. Tuvok had a goatee,
of
right?
course.
Yeah, and so like, I feel like this was the writers. Homage the Mirror Universe. I feel like the writers were like, okay, let's do a Mirror Universe episode, and the producers maybe were like, nah, I don't want to do it. How are we going to make it work? Let's do this instead.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like that's what happened, and obviously I have no basis for this. I really do feel that way. So like, even though we didn't get a quote-unquote canon Mirror Universe episode, I really do feel like Living Witness is what we got.
Yeah, I do. I agree with your scenario. I think that is exactly what happened. They just thought, oh, no, that's really hokey. We're doing it on Deep Space Nine. We can't do it on Voyager 2. And so we got a taste of it via this episode, but we're going to really delve into it here. We have to imagine, everybody, because both in our real lives and in podcast land, we have to imagine, because we can't see anything, a big whiteboard. We're in the writer's room, and we're going to come up with the definitive Voyager Mirror Universe episode. And of course, it's therefore going to have a lot more skin. It's going to have a lot more violence. and there's going to be more goatees, and there's just going to be a whole lot of shenanigans going down. So this is going to be fun.
Let's get this started. And as you guys know, or maybe that you don't know, is that we do not talk about this beforehand. Char and I have not talked.
Not at all.
On the other side of the room, we have not messaged. We have not texted. I have not even thought about it. Okay, like,
yes,
all I know is, like, we're
here
doing a Mirror Universe episode, and so we have not cataloged any ideas away. This is pure invention, and you're about to witness it happen, so we're erasing the whiteboard, and the episode starts now.
Okay. All right. Now, first things first, Janeway is alive, unlike in our last episode. Because I want to see Janeway with those leather gloves and a whip, and I think you're going to see the Maquis be servants. She's going to capture them, and she's going to just be downright crude to them.
Okay, well, first off, though, we have to think about this. Is there a Maquis? Because here's the deal. It's like, you got to take everything in perspective. Okay, so we saw, like, chronologically, a Mirror Darkly happened. Inner Mirror Darkly with Enterprise happened. And so we see the rise of that empire with Hoshi, and then we have TOS, and we all know what happened in TOS. So the most recent thing that we saw was Deep Space Nine's Mirror Universe.
True.
So we have to use that as a jumping off point. Like, we have to figure out what was established there. And so from there, what we know is that the humans, the Terrans, like, even though, like, they were in charge during TOS and Enterprise and everything like that, in Deep Space Nine, they fell on hard times. Like, the Terrans were slaves, and the Terrans went through a lot of hard times with the Klingons and with the Cardassians and everything like that. And Terrans were not the top dogs. They did not rule this huge empire. They were freedom fighters already.
That's true. Okay.
And so once we kind of take that as a jumping off point where the Terrans now rule Deep Space Nine, but it doesn't mean that the Terrans now have this big empire. It doesn't mean that the Terrans rule the universe or defeated all of Klingons and all of Cardassia, but the Terrans have the Defiant because they made the Defiant because they stole the plans for it. They have Deep Space Nine. They have the Defiant. They achieved a huge blow against the Klingons and the Cardassians and everything like that. But the thing is that what do we do? Like, is there a Voyager? You know, is it in the Delta Quadrant? There's no Starfleet.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, is there a Voyager? It's not going to be a science vessel. Because
no,
does anybody care
vessel.
About science in the Mirror Universe? Probably not. So you're going to have the warship Voyager, if anything.
Oh, okay. What if we do this? Like, where it's the Terrans trying to build up their military or build up their fighting force because they had nothing, but since they had the resources of Deep Space Nine, now that they took over Deep Space Nine, they have those resources, they established themselves, they have the Defiant, now that they have a vessel that can fight, maybe they try to build more. They try to build different ships. They try to build bigger ships. And it's still near the Badlands, okay?
Okay, yeah. I want to get into this because you have to address, well, is the Caretaker still going to bring him over to the Delta Quadrant? And
right.
That leads into my big idea, and I think the answer to that is yes.
Yes, I agree.
Because, they build this great warship Voyager, and it is just, it's beautiful, and this gives them a fighting chance, and it gives them hope. But then it gets lost in the Badlands, and they don't know what happened to it. And so that's it. That's like the tragic loss.
Okay, that's what it is. Is that, like, they put all of their resources into this ship. Like, the Terrans, they're like, okay, if we're going to win, if we're going to survive, we have to have a ship. We have to have a flagship, okay? We have to have a ship that is the head of our arsenal that will not only protect Deep Space Nine, but go out and protect our new Terran Empire. Like, we're trying to...
Right, they're trying to build it.
They're trying to build their own, not necessarily an empire, but they're trying to build their own niche. Like, they're trying to build their own nook of the galaxy, and it'll ultimately go back to Earth.
They want their piece of the pie.
Yeah, they want their piece of the pie, and so they have to start somewhere, and they start at Deep Space Nine in that piece of space, and they come together and build this ship. So, why do they go to the Badlands?
Maybe it's just is it a battle to capture a lesser ship that they could bring into their ranks and just, I don't know, keep as prisoners? Maybe there's something threatening about Chakotay.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing is that we need to think about is that there's this big shift in Deep Space Nine Mirror Universe where the humans aren't necessarily evil anymore. Like, they're rough and tumble, like, they're all, like, they're still all still opposites, like, Bashir was a jackass, and O'Brien was well, meek, and everything know. Like
Season
that.
Season one, Bashir was kind of a jackass, too, but well, in a different
even
way.
Even more so, and, like, and, Jadzia and Sisko, you know, had sex.
Yes,
you know,
it's
like,
true.
So all these weird things are still happening, but it's not necessarily the Nazi rule anymore.
Yeah, okay, so why would they be going out to the Badlands and... We have to assume that maybe if that's where they do indeed get lost, why is Chakotay out there too? Why was he pulled to the Delta Quadrant? Because I think he was.
Yeah, I think let's keep all the same people. Let's
keep
all
the same people.
Yeah,
you kind of have to because it is a mirror universe. It's the same people.
But I feel like they're all freedom fighters. They're all Maquis. You know, like they're all in the same goal.
Okay.
I feel like that has to happen because like you still need to have division and like maybe the division can be. How they go about it, like Janeway wants to take this ship and just destroy, you know, all of the bad guys. Like she wants to destroy the Klingons and destroy the Cardassians, and maybe Chakotay, her first officer, is the one who's like, no, we need to just establish our borders and defend our borders. You know, like maybe she's the gung ho one and he's not. And so I feel like you can still have that division on the ship, but it's just for very different reasons. So let's...
All right, so they're all on Voyager? Is that it?
I think, like, they're all on Voyager, and but the thing is, like, we need to establish, like, how they got there. So, like, I say Caretaker. I say that the Caretaker did bring them over there. They were in the Badlands for whatever reasons. Like, they were investigating new hideouts. You know, like, they're, like, because the Maquis
tactics.
Used that as a hideout.
To try and ambush people or something, yeah.
And so they're and disagree with me or tell me if I'm wrong, if I'm going in a wrong direction, but they get flung into the Caretaker, into the Delta Quadrant, and she kills the Caretaker.
Okay.
Because like she's so pissed because she's like, no, like this ship was built for war, this ship was built for our Terran brethren, and we have to get back. And he said no, and so she's like, "Fine, I'll kill you," and so that's how they're there, like trying to make it home. What
but
do you think?
Wait, Mirror Universe Janeway would see an opportunity here, because even if she's the commander of the new awesome flagship, she knows in her heart of hearts that the Mirror Universe Terrans don't really have much of a prayer to accomplish that much in that part of space. Now they're in the Delta Quadrant, and she could take this place by storm. She sees the Kazon there, these lesser people whom she can just kill crazily. They're no match. And so she can build the Terran Empire in the Delta Quadrant. That's why she kills the Caretaker. It's an opportunity for power.
Here's my counterpoint here. Here's my counterpoint is that this ship
Kashyyyk.
The ship was made specifically to defend the new Terran Empire.
Right, but once she gets out here, she's like, oh, this is even better. I can be queen of this whole quadrant.
Now we've established up until this point, we've established how they got there, how they were built, who's on there and everything like that. This isn't the episode, though. This is just the backstory
of how they got there. Well, we have to establish all this to do the episode.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is that with the Mirror Universe, in order to get to the Mirror Universe, like you have to be, you're in that region of space, right?
Yeah.
Like, and so if Janeway stayed where she was in the Delta Quadrant.
Oh, but she wasn't going to.
But, okay, so, but you just said that like 5 seconds ago, that like she tries to take over the Delta Quadrant by storm. See, Janeway and crew are making their way home. And so wouldn't Mirror Universe Janeway and crew have to do the same kind of parallel path in order to meet them in the same place?
Man.
And so that's where we have to establish when does this Mirror Universe happen? That's what we have to establish next
that's
is when
true.
Does that happen? And then we can go with the story.
Okay, true. Because if we're doing season one, I mean, really, think about how that would air in the Voyager canon. That doesn't work. Like when they do say the Naked Time and the Naked Now on TOS and TNG, it's like, we don't even know these characters yet. Why would you make them go off the wall and be the opposite of what they truly are? So I feel like doing the Mirror Universe in season one would kind of be the same thing. So,
well, let me take this from a different perspective then. Is that we in TOS and DS9, we see characters from the Prime timeline go into the Mirror Universe, but in Enterprise, we don't see that.
It's true.
In Enterprise, it's all pure Mirror Universe, except for like a little, like, you know, like the ship that came in, the Defiant, you know, came in.
Right.
From the alternate timeline. And also from the future as well. So technically, I mean, like, I shouldn't have curtailed you because it sounds like we could do whatever the hell we want.
I agree. I think that's a better way to do this.
We could just show that, although I do think it might be interesting to see some of our Prime characters cross over.
It would, but I never, for whatever reason, envisioned that when we decided to do this topic. I guess maybe it's because I watched Enterprise so recently, I just had that frame of mind in my mind, and so I think we can go with that. Why not?
Okay. All right. Okay, let's do that then. Okay, we've established that. So this is a standalone Mirror Universe episode.
The real Valentine to the fans.
So this is a standalone. We're not going to have any Prime characters come in. Maybe. So they're in the Delta Quadrant. Janeway's there. Chakotay's there. Everybody else is there. Now, we've seen Tuvok in the Mirror Universe before.
Yes.
We saw him in Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. And so I think that he's a logical jumping off point. He's kind of our connection to the Terran, to the new Terran Empire.
Uh-huh.
Where he was commissioned there. He's just like, I was there. I was there when we took Deep Space Nine. You don't know what it was like, blah, blah, blah. So you want to go, I don't know how much I like about her establishing her own empire in the Delta Quadrant, because Voyager is so much about the journey and about trying to get home. We'd miss out on so many callbacks where, like, if they're not journeying home, they'll never have met the Krynum. They'll never have met the Tic Tac. You know, so if we did that where they just stayed in one region and kind of like took over the Caretaker's Array or took over the Unkompan home planet, you wouldn't be able to say like, oh, the Tic Tac, I insulted them and so I just shot them. You know,
like
something like that. So I'm just saying, think about that. Just think about that.
Yeah. Okay. What if they are making their way home? It doesn't ring true to me that they would be like, oh, we got to get back, even though it's going to take us 70 years and we're going to be half dead by then. I just see it as an opportunity for conquest. That's all I see for Janeway.
But
I'm somehow going to be the superior force in this area. But I see your point too, and I'm not sure how to sort that out.
But that's the thing, is that like the tonal shift in the Mirror Universe that Deep Space Nine established, is that like everybody's still pissed off and everyone's still angry and everyone's like a Mirror Universe of themselves, but they are no longer the Nazis. They're no longer the ones bent on domination and conquest because they lost their empire. And so I feel like we don't have to go on the TOS and Enterprise route so much. I feel like we kind of have to go more on the Deep Space Nine route, where they have this loyalty to each other now, where they had the empire, it fell, and so now it's all about regaining that empire, not necessarily about conquest wherever.
Okay, but then why would she kill the caretaker? Because then he could bring them back a lot more quickly.
But see, that's something that we'll have to think about. Like, that's something that we have to establish, is that...
How about if the Kazon killed him?
Oh, that's even better. Okay, so let's keep Janeway maniacal. Let's keep her crazy. Like, she's...
Sure.
She wants to go home to defend the Terran Empire, this new Terran Empire, and to build it back up. And she is super gung-ho about that. She's like, no, at any cost, the Cardassians and the Klingons will die. And so that's what drives her home, is conquest of that empire, not conquest in the Delta Quadrant.
Okay.
And so along the way, we get to see Janeway make these decisions that actually get her home faster. Maybe like they actually let her go faster because our Janeway, you know, she's all about like diplomacy and peace and like not ruffling any feathers while she goes along, for the most part.
Exploration. Yeah. Science. We have to explore the nebula.
You know, think about if Janeway was much more like Seven with her pragmatism about, you know, like about how like this would be a much shorter trip if I just disregarded the Prime Directive. There is no Prime Directive, so she can do whatever the hell she wants while she's along the way.
A lot of people are going to die.
So like, okay, so I like your idea of the Kazon killing the caretaker. What is their motivation for killing the caretaker? And how does that come about? Like, why is Janeway affected from that?
Okay, I think they see how desperate Janeway is, and all the Kazon see is this awesome warship that's going to give the Kazon a leg up in that part of space if they manage to take it over. So they're going to defeat Janeway by killing the caretaker, and then they try to take over the ship. But lo and behold, the Voyager crew, they defeat the Kazon, because the Kazon are still the freaking Kazon. Mm-hmm. And so there's a massive massacre of Kazon to start off the show. You know, they do whatever is necessary to get these buggers off the ship. And then with nothing left, they have to go on their way.
I like that a lot. I think that's really smart. I like that you suggested that. I think, let's say that Janeway was actually smart enough to negotiate. The caretaker's like, well, I can send you home, but then the Okompans are going to be compromised. She's like, I don't care. I don't care. Like, I do not give a damn about the Okompans.
Yeah.
Send us
home.
They're
on their own.
And so the caretaker agrees to send them home, or the caretaker dies on his own, like he did in the show. And so they're like, okay, let's use the array to go home. Mm-hmm. And then the Kazon are like, find out that is actually using the array to go home, and they destroy the array.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think the reasoning behind what you said. I think that's good. And so then, now after 24 minutes of talking about this, we've established our universe.
Yes.
And we can do whatever the hell we want.
Sex slaves.
Oh my God.
Sorry, I had to.
So let's talk about the tone of the ship. So, like, does Voyager look like Voyager? Is it an Intrepid class ship? I don't think so.
No.
I think it's a completely different ship. I feel like it's an extrapolation from the Defiant. I feel like,
yeah,
it's something that it's a much larger Defiant type ship.
I agree. They're not going to stray too much from that model, because that's a nice, I mean, as good as and sleek as Voyager is, Defiant is just a tough little ship, for lack of a better phrase. That just really does define it. So Voyager is essentially going to be the Defiant on steroids.
And, like, no luxuries, no holodecks.
No.
Maybe one shuttle, and it's tiny, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, they just have it very rough, kind of like the Equinox, where it's all stripped down.
Yeah, very bare bones, utilitarian. It's going to serve its purpose. It's a machine. It's not a home.
Yeah, this was for defending borders and expanding borders, and that's it. This was not a ship of exploration. This was not a ship of diplomacy. This was not a ship of scientific discovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got one very important purpose, and it's built solely around that. So it's going to be a very different ship.
Mm-hmm. Do we still call it Voyager?
I don't know. Voyager just doesn't seem to work, does it?
I think it's just called Intrepid. I think that's what it is.
Intrepid. I like
it's
it.
It's just Intrepid.
It's a nice homage. It's familiar enough, but it's different. Good call. Yeah. The Intrepid. The ISS Intrepid.
Yeah, the ISS Intrepid.
Awesome.
Okay, so the ISS Intrepid as a callback to the old Empire. So they're journeying along. Like, when we started this, we were just going to say, like, we're going to write an episode, and we have, like, a beginning, middle, and end, and we have a protagonist, everything like that. But I am much more keen on building this world, building this universe, and then revisiting it later. Like, let's do another write-your-own episode, but it's a mirror universe episode in this universe that we established.
I think we have to keep doing what we're doing right now before we even write another episode. So even though we went in with that intent, I agree, we're going to have to do that later. So we're actually, this is the second episode in a row now where we're going to have to say, we're going to have to do a part two, but we will.
But we will. Okay, so we talked about the ship. It's much more streamlined. It's probably bigger than the Defiant, but it's much more like the Defiant. It's stripped down, and it's called the ISS Intrepid. And so we've established the Janeway personality. Like, she's all about revenge. She's all about getting back home at any costs, whether it means death or not. And Chakotay, I don't know if you agree with me, but I like the idea of making him a man of peace. He's not about expanding the borders or about hurting anyone. It's just about defending, you know, his people, defending the Terrans. And, you know, like, so he's not a he's still a freedom fighter, but he's not as gung-ho as he used to be. What, like, if you agree with that, we can move on to the other characters, or what do you think about that?
I agree. I think this Chakotay, he would have the attitude of, I'm not going to start a fight, but I'll finish it if we're provoked.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Chakotay wants to play things, and that's very different from Janeway. Now, the dynamic between those two, how is it going to work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what are we going to have here? Because those are two very different ideologies, and so they're going to be butting heads all the time. Why in the world is he her first officer then?
I feel like he was placed there politically. He was placed there as someone who would keep Janeway in check.
A voice of reason.
A voice of reason. Like, people knew that Janeway was the best person for the job because she would get it done by any means necessary. But at the same time, they're like, we don't want someone who's going to, like, suicide themselves for the mission or someone who's going to, like, risk the ship.
Okay, I like that.
Maybe that's what it is. It's like, Janeway is gung-ho and the best person for the job, but they invested so much into the ship. They need to make sure that, like, he's, like, the insurance guy. Like, he's like, okay, I don't know if we can risk the ship for that. You know,
right,
that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's the balance, because I like that. I like that. Janeway knows how to get things done. She knows how to take action and not think back. But they need somebody there to kind of keep her in check from doing anything too drastic, just because there is so much at stake here. I like that. Yes, let's go with that.
Let's go with that. Okay, so Tuvok is there. And Tuvok was pretty much the same as we saw in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I think we just keep with that.
We just keep with that. And so let's go on to Tom, all right?
Tom. Oh, God. Does he have a mustache like he did in Author, Author?
No, I feel like Tom is basically just before season one Tom. Like, I think Tom is the type of guy in Non Sequitur where...
sleazy drunk?
Like, he's a sleazy drunk. He's kind of a rogue. But the thing is, the only reason why he's a pilot is because he's literally the best that the Terrans have got.
Yeah. Like, even though he's a total drunk and he's flying at warp speed... while he's drunk, he's still the best damn pilot you could ever have. He's just that good. He's a functioning alcoholic. Let's put it that way.
Okay, so where he's a functioning alcoholic, he's a bastard.
Is he with B'Elanna?
I'm wondering that because I was about to jump on to B'Elanna.
Yeah, because what is B'Elanna like here?
I want to make her full Klingon.
Okay.
I either want to make her full Klingon or full human or something like that, or do some sort of weird thing. Like, I know it doesn't work that way. Like, I know
what if... we have, in this mirror universe, the same thing happened in Faces as we saw, but the full Klingon lived.
That's such a good idea. But the thing is, okay, so we... That's such a good idea.
Let's just make that... That happened. It worked that way.
But we have... Okay, but one thing that we have to account for is that they're at war with the Klingons. What is a non-human doing with the humans?
Oh, yeah! She's hanging out in the brig then.
Ooh, what if she was a spy? We might be getting too deep here. Like,
we're going in several directions at once. Board is just filling up here.
Here's the thing, is that they're at war with the Klingons and the Cardassians and everything like that, and so we might have a yesterday's Enterprise syndrome where Worf just has to go away. Worf is not mentioned, he's not seen, because it just wouldn't happen in that timeline.
Right, no.
Do we need to do that with B'Elanna? Is she just gone? Because I don't want to, because I love your idea.
I know, yeah.
Is there a way that we can rectify that? Is there a way that we can...
Well, maybe the fact that she's Klingon, and maybe full Klingon at that, she's such a damn good engineer that honestly, there's nobody else better for the job. But she's constantly fighting to get her ideas heard because everybody is just spitting in her face.
So B'Elanna has always had a problem with her mixed heritage. It's always been a jumping point. That's always been a point of contention with the mirror universe that has to be amplified, because think about a half-breed in the mirror universe. That wouldn't fly. That's not legal. That's not possible. That's not supposed to happen. At least in the Federation, it's allowed and it's legal and it's accepted, even if people are angry about it. This is illegal. Her existence had to be kept a secret. And so she was, let's say that she's been with the Resistance since day one, because the moment that she was born, she had to be a freedom fighter because her sheer existence was illegal.
Ooh. Okay, so then do you keep her half Klingon then?
I think we keep her half Klingon, and then in a write your own episode down the line, you know, like she becomes full Klingon or something like that. So I say we keep her half Klingon because her mom was a high ranking Klingon official. And her dad was a slave, and they fell in love. Or even worse, she used him, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And a child came about, and somehow the slave father took the child and smuggled her to the Resistance, but he died, and so she never met her mother.
Or what if for whatever reason, she wanted to keep the child, but obviously couldn't have it around because, you know, we're talking the mother here.
Yeah.
Because of her position. So she takes B'Elanna off to the resistance, somebody she knows, for safekeeping, knowing that she's going to be better off there than around her. I don't know if that makes any sense.
What if it's Tuvok, because Tuvok's old?
Yeah. And Tuvok would be accepting of that.
Tuvok raised B'Elanna.
Oh my god. Would that not be weird?
That would be so freaking weird. Whoa. I like it, though. Tuvok raised B'Elanna, and
the stories, the flashbacks coming out of that would just be...
Yeah, he's the only reason why she's on the ship.
Oh my god.
Janeway didn't want a half-breed on her ship.
Yeah.
And
everybody
like,
hates her.
Everybody hates her because she's a half-breed. She represents everything that's wrong with the current state of affairs because the Klingons are horrible, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Oh, and so that resentment within herself has just got to be even tenfold, magnified. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Tuvok's the only one who defends her.
Oh my god. Oh, this could be so much fun!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Tuvok's breaking up fights in engineering all the time, and, you know, coming to her rescue practically because she's, as much as she defends herself, she knows better than to bite back too much just because, well, she's done this how many times in her life?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, poor B'Elanna. She's going to have some serious self-esteem issues.
Serious self-esteem issues, yeah.
Oh, poor B'Elanna. I feel bad for her already. but I do like it just because of the complexity.
Yeah, so that's B'Elanna's storyline. Okay, so now we need to talk about Harry's storyline.
Okay, yeah, Harry. What is he doing in the Mirror Universe? Okay, he's got a goatee, for sure.
He's got a goatee. He's got long hair.
Yeah, I love like Garrett Wong, like 2008. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's got a goatee, he's got a... And so Harry just has to be a badass, right?
You think maybe he would be the head of security, and he's a total badass. He's going to drop kick you.
Yeah, he's the head of security, and Tuvok's not.
Yeah. Harkening back to last week's episode.
This is our second time saying that Harry Kim's going to be in
it, the It's pure destiny, apparently.
So he's a badass. He's, say that he's, fly off the handle badass. Like, if Janeway is gung-ho and is willing to sacrifice whomever in order to accomplish her mission, let's say that Harry Kim is actually evil. Like, he's the one truly evil person on the crew.
Okay, I like it. Yeah, and he's gonna try and overtake the ship. He's eventually calculating his way to becoming captain of this ship. You know he is. He's just waiting for the right time to strike.
Maybe what you talked about with Janeway earlier is implemented into Harry Kim on in this way. Like, Harry Kim is the one who says, no, we should stay here, okay? No one knows what a human is here. We can do whatever the hell we want
Maybe
in this
Harry
part of the galaxy.
Harry wants his own empire.
Harry wants his own empire.
Oh, I like it. Yeah. Oh, idea. The reason why he's still an ensign is because Janeway refuses to promote him.
He refuses to promote him because he wants to turn it every time. And so what if he is a direct descendant of Empress Hoshi
Empress
Sato?
I like it. And so he feels entitled.
Yeah, exactly. He feels entitled, and he brings it up. He's like, I am a direct descendant of Empress Sato, and we deserve, I deserve my own dynasty in the Delta Quadrant. This is my destiny.
That's right. Oh, yes. Oh, this is so good. Yes. Oh, could you imagine Garrett Wong playing this? He would have such a freaking blast. I hope he listens to this podcast.
I know. I hope so, too. And I don't know, for some reason, I just imagine him, I know this isn't possible or even logistically accurate, but I imagine him with long fingernails for some reason.
Why not?
Just like
Why
creepy.
Not? Yeah, just because creep factor, right?
just because creep factor. It'd be hard to tap the Okudograms, but you know.
But he's not sitting at ops very much. He would have some other, forgive me, he'd have some bitch doing his actual work while he's calculating his plan for dominance.
Okay, that's right. So we know that they don't treat aliens very well.
Nope.
So where is Neelix and Kes? What are they doing?
Are they servants? Or are they on the ship at all? Because why would they want to come aboard this ship? Or are they captured?
I feel like if they were on, they would have to be captured because... Mm-hmm. And like I keep talking about, you know, the shift in Deep Space Nine of the Terrans, you know, they're no longer the absolute evil ones, but...
Yeah, but here the tables are... Anything goes.
Anything goes. And so What if they are persuaded to stay?
But then treated like servants?
Yes, like they're persuaded to stay by some sort of diabolical means, like saying like, well, if you guide us through this region of space, we'll let Kiss live. You know, like something, I don't know, like, you know, something along
something
those lines.
Something like that.
Something sinister. Maybe not too sinister.
If you think back to Caretaker, I mean, Neelix kind of did a shady thing with Janeway and crew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, using them to repay the Kazon with water that he borrowed and didn't repay back. Well, what if Janeway feels crossed about that and therefore Neelix is her prisoner because he tried to screw her over in a sense. He was using her.
Or indentured servitude. Like that's the crux.
There you go.
Like, that's how it is. It's like, okay, you screwed me over. You made me lose my foothold with the Kazon, or like you established them to hate me right off the bat. And so we can't go home because of you. And so she uses guilt and force.
Yeah, you're going to repay this debt.
You're going to repay this debt. Like, I, you know, rescued your lover. You stranded me here. Your actions directly stranded me here because the Kazon hate us now and destroyed the array. And so you are going to be our guide. And so she is disgusted with him, but he stays on because it's still a better life than what he had before. Like, he still gets food, he still gets water.
Right, yeah.
But he's treated like a second-class citizen.
Yeah. Yeah, and essentially they work as servants. They do the dirty work on the ship.
Yeah.
They do all the cooking, all the cleaning, you name it, whatever they're ordered to do. And they don't question it, they do it, because they know they don't have much choice.
The Doctor. That's our last one before we sign off.
See, I think the Doctor is probably just the most boring thing.
But the thing is, do they even have the ability to make the Doctor in this universe?
Maybe they don't.
Maybe they don't, or maybe he was a program that they stole from the Klingon and Cardassian, from the Klingons and Cardassian. So maybe the Doctor isn't human. The Doctor is a Klingon, or the Doctor is a... Oh, no, the Doctor is a Cardassian. The Doctor is a Cardassian, and he's much more like... Oh, what was the name of that Cardassian doctor? Maset or whatever?
The one that B'Elanna refused to get treatment
nothing
from.
Human.
Oh, shoot. I don't remember the name, but I know who you're talking about. It could be something like that, sure, where he's going to kind of do whatever he wants in the name of research, maybe?
It's Moset. Dr. Krell Moset is the name.
Okay, thank you.
I like that a lot. Like, it's still Robert Picardo. It's still Robert Picardo, just in Cardassian makeup. It's a program that they stole from the bad guys, and they implemented it here because they knew that they were going to need help. Like, they knew that they were going to be on the edge of their borders constantly, and so that they needed some sort of medical help. And like, maybe no one really had intense medical training that they could find for the resistance.
Right. So this guy,
like, all they had was a field medic. You know, like, that's all that they had. And so they stole this program and they tried to reprogram him, but they didn't have the skills needed, and so like he sometimes would revert back to his kind of like do anything that's necessary stakes. Like, he'll put patients at risk, or he'll kill a patient in order to learn more to save another, you know, like something
right,
like that.
Right. Yeah. He doesn't have, I guess, the ethical subroutines that our doctor would.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I like that.
And they do some sort of mention. They're like, can't you make him look human? And they're like, it's too well protected. I can't change it. That I don't know. It's like tech. Whatever.
Yeah, they don't have the ability. They don't know how to work these things. And so it's so important that they have the medical knowledge that they just don't tamper with him. He's a Cardassian, even though they practically cringe every time that they look at him.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, I like that a lot. I like that perspective.
So they're going to treat him like crap, too.
So we have our crew. We have our Mirror Universe crew. We have our Mirror Universe ship. We have our Mirror Universe Delta Quadrant.
Yeah. Now we could write the episode, but we've already done a full-length episode of To the Journey. So, like we mentioned earlier, we're going to have to actually write the episode in another installment here. But we did create our universe here, and it's fantastic.
I think we did Caretaker in a Mirror Darkly. You know, like, that's...
Yeah.
I feel like that's what we did. Like, okay, so what would we name it? Like, what would we name this episode?
Okay.
That's how we can finish today's podcast.
I like it. Okay, what would we call it?
So it's got to have the word mirror in it.
Naturally.
And it's got to have some sort of connection with Voyager or the Intrepid or the Delta Quadrant. So the episodes that we've seen already is Mirror Mirror, Through the Looking Glass, crossover, Shattered Mirror, In a Mirror Darkly.
Okay.
And I guess we had references to the mirror, like people from the mirror universe came over to DS9 in an episode called Resurrection, and we have the Emperor's New Cloak. So I guess it doesn't necessarily have to have the word mirror in it.
No, it would be awesomely clever of us if it did, but what is the most fitting title, period? Let's just go with that.
Oh, okay, what if it's Stranded in the Rabbit Hole or something like that, where like it's like in like in Alice in Wonderland, it's tumbling down the rabbit hole.
Right.
And she's in this new universe, but what if Alice is trapped in the rabbit hole? You know, like is
Yeah.
Because they're trapped, like even though like this is a mirror universe episode self-contained where they don't know they're in a mirror universe, that doesn't matter for the viewers. And so what if it was something about that, like trapped
like
in the
that.
Rabbit hole. Yeah. That's what it's called, Trapped in the Rabbit Hole.
Okay. Sold. I like it.
A little long.
Yeah. It's not the one word title we're used to, but that seems very fitting, and it's a nice little hankering back to Through the Looking Glass. So it makes sense and it suits the episode. Good work.
Thank you very much. All right. There we go.
Okay, so that is our mirror universe, and we'll have to keep going with this now. And the mirror universe isn't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And celebrate his life and celebrate his work and his talent and his integrity. And if you get a tear in the eye, that's okay. That's he would approve. Spock would approve. And you know, he'd say, "You humans, why do you feel you need to do this?" But he would approve.
Earl Grey.
Like, I'm expecting Ricardo Martaban to like walk around the corner and be like, "Captain Picard, welcome.
This is Risa 5.
The shuttlecraft. The shuttlecraft.
The orb."
Usually, you want to be able to capture it or isolate one, but you can't do that either because it just keeps, you know. So it really does seem like a conundrum of, okay, how do we take this down?
You know, this minefield, they are the tribbles of war.
To the journey!
One guy's like, "Why don't we just write better stories for Wesley?" And then the lead writer's like, "You out now!"
The ready room.
Riker's all pissed because he can't prop his leg up with no gravity.
He tries, though. He tries.
He's trying. I can picture it. He's
but got then the momentum just, makes him somersault.
Which really just makes him look spread eagle.
Going in circles.
He's spinning.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's also the end of a character and a thing that is really about how death is just a part of life. And that while there's an end, it doesn't mean that it's the end.
Literary Treks.
Well, actually, it started out life as a comic book pitch. I originally came up with it to pitch to Wildstorm back when they had the comics license. The idea was it would be a one-year series that would run throughout the 12 calendar months of 2001, which was the 35th anniversary of Star Trek.
The 602 Club.
Sometimes that just works better because you can create and craft a story that's very compelling because you're not having to worry about what's happened other places. Okay, we have to make sure this is going to connect to this, and my guess is somehow Agent Carter is going to have something to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. later on, and maybe something that happens in Age of Ultron.
Warp 5.
In the history of Axanar, Alec Peters and Christian Gossett wrote a section of the history dealing with the Arcanus campaign. And in the Arcanus campaign, a majority of Starfleet ships were destroyed.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available pretty much wherever you can get podcasts these days, virtually on any kind of platform that you please. None of these podcasts on Trek FM are possible without the help of our sponsor, so let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Another way that you can consider helping us is by becoming a patron on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/trekfm, and there's various levels of contribution that you can take a look at. There's different perks depending on the level, and every little bit helps. But anyway, we really do appreciate the support of those of you who have already become subscribers, and we really want to thank our associate producers, Jamie Deuce, Kenneth Tripp, and Lisa Stevens. You can follow Lisa on Twitter at Flip18, and we appreciate their support of To the Journey and Trek FM at large. Now, next week, we've got another awesome episode coming your way. What are we doing, Tristan?
I'm really excited about what we're going to do next week, because the past two episodes, including this one, have all about what could have been. What would it look like if this happened? It's us asking the if question. Last week, we talked about what would the show look like if Janeway died. Today, we asked what would Voyager look like if it was a Mirror Universe episode or a Mirror Universe in general. And so next week, we're going to talk about what would a prequel and or a sequel of Voyager look like. And so we're going to be constantly asking the if questions. And I feel like this is going to be the summation of the To the Journey trilogy that we started.
There we go. Yeah, we're on a little streak. We might as well keep it going.
We'll keep it going, but you'll have to tune in next week to hear it. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!